Okay.
Blog Talk Radio.
April 8th, 2013, and I've got a new attitude. How about you? This is Foxology. I am your host, Silver Ray Fox, and I am so glad that you tuned in, and I mean that in more ways than one. Of course, I'm glad that you've tuned in to listen, no doubt about that, but I'm happier and even more excited that when you know there's some good news on the air that you can learn from, grow from, be empowered from, you get yourself tuned into that. I know it's not by chance that you stopped by to chat with me today. I know you had your antenna up looking and listening for information about making money, building wealth, building your credit, and building your dream. That is good news, isn't it? Sounds like it is to me. All of us know the perks of prosperity. It gives you greater ease of life. You can make more choices about just about everything you can think of that you want to do. And while I know it can't buy health and happiness, it can contribute to maintaining health in some cases and, of course, to your well-being. So why not learn every way possible to have more of it? It just makes dollars and cents. Well, I know that my special guest today would agree. He's had an amazing life experience as a thriving entrepreneur, and he will share his highs and lows with us, as well as tried and true strategies for making your finances and my finances and our future financially brighter. Clyde Anderson is an author and expert financial analyst and advisor, and you've probably seen him on CNN. That was the first time that I saw him and reached out to him on Facebook to become friends. He contributes a wealth of information there, and it helps lots of individuals and families prosper, and I am so excited to have him on the Foxology stage today. Clyde, hi. How are you doing?
Hello, hello. I'm doing wonderful. How are you?
I am so, so blessed and so excited. I am telling you, I have, you know, it's one of those things where you've been thinking about it and visualizing it. I actually had launched Foxology the first time a couple of years ago, had to put that on hold to various life things that happened, and so got back to it. But I always had you and several other people that I am still reaching out to in mind to be on the air with me. So it's just a lovely moment for me. I'm really glad to be.
You mentioned that, you know, I guess it's been several years ago since we first connected, actually. And
mm-hmm.
I was
it's been
looking
three, at least.
What you were doing. Yeah, I'm looking to see what you're doing, and I always admire your energy, your spirit, and what you're doing, so thanks for having me.
Well, thank you, too, and I likewise enjoy seeing what you're doing, and I've seen a lot of things happen over the last couple, 3 years with you, so I'm excited to have everybody else know about it, too. You know,
good.
Let's just start kind of at the beginning, because you have such a fun story.
Yeah. When I read the fact that you started out as a young entrepreneur, I want to ask a few things about that. First of all, at 7 years old, when most of us are just taking every one of our little nickels, dimes, and quarters to the candy store to buy candy, how in the world does a seven-year-old stop to think about, okay, well, I'm going to buy some candy for myself, and the rest of this candy, I'm going to sell it to other people for twice as much as I paid for it?
Right. You know what? It's interesting. You know, I wanted to be an entrepreneur before I even knew what an entrepreneur was. And it was just something that was in me, and I just it came to me like, okay, kids were wanting candy, and so why not be able to get it here for this price and then sell it to them for that price? I can remember making my first $20 and thinking I was rich.
$20?
$20 off of selling candy, and I thought, hey, I've made it. This is it. I love it. And I think there it really just kind of intensified the bug I had for entrepreneurship. And what I would do often was, you know, I grew up in Detroit, Michigan, and we lived right off of an 8 Mile Road in an apartment building, and I would wait till around 4:30, 5 o'clock when people started coming home, set up a TV tray outside, too. So I was already selling at school, then I would set my TV tray up in the evening. So when the parents came home, you know, it's hard for an adult to say no to a 7-year-old kid selling some lemon heads. And they probably didn't need the lemon heads, but, again, they bought them. And that was really what started me off, saying that this was possible. I could do something.
Well, I tell you, you partially answered my question. That's so fascinating. But you said even you didn't even know in your own head where all of that came from. And, you know, you want to know, because so many people, you know, they don't, I mean, look at the guy Ray Kroc, who started McDonald's, didn't get his genius until he was about 50 years old. And here you are at seven, already calculating the dynamics of what it means to make an exchange with money and make money with basically something that's so, and I guess that's the case, something so common to everybody.
Yeah.
But as I said, I think to myself, now I know the corner store was just really close to me, so I could walk there. But I guess if you had been, you know, between me and the store, I may have stopped and done business with you. I think it was clever.
It was really, I've always had a love to be creative. So I've always loved to draw and do things. So I always think of creative solutions to problems. How can I fix something? I would take things apart and try to figure out how you put them back together. And that's just how my mind worked. And so when I saw, anytime I saw a need, and which I think is true for any of your listeners, that, you know, it's about solving a problem. And as long as I can solve a problem, I realized, like, okay, maybe I'm on to something. And that's when, you know, by the time I was 11, I had a paper route. And I started hiring other people to help me work the paper route. It became a huge paper route. And that's my first experience of then hiring other people to help me, you know, meet my goal or do what I needed to do. And it was just, it was fun. It was cool. It wasn't a lot of pressure, you know, as you get to when you're an adult and growing, you know, a business. But it was fun, and it gave me a good foundation. Now, I always wish that I probably would have had someone else that was a mentor to really guide me. I wish I would have had that Ray Kroc idea that would have, you know, I could have carried through. And today, you know, who knows what I could have created. But I think that's why mentorship is also so important, finding somebody that's doing what you're doing and making sure that you study them and you follow them, you shadow them, you help them, do whatever you can to get that knowledge.
So, Clyde, are you telling me that when you started your paper route and it got too overwhelming for just you, you came up with the idea on your own to hire people and pay them to share on the route and get that done? All by yourself, no mom and dad saying you need to either give that up because you can't handle it, or you came up with that all alone.
Yeah, it was interesting. You know, I grew up in a single parent household, so it was just my mom and I, and so I had a lot of time. You know, I was what I guess they call a latchkey kid, and you know, I had a lot of time with myself, and I was the only child to do things. But I had a lot of friends in the neighborhood, and I remember it was one day, you know, my paper route was just huge. And, you know, my mother would help me probably once a week sometimes when I was collecting, drive around, so I wouldn't have to carry the papers or if it was raining. So I had a wagon, and then I had the thing that you put over your head with all the papers in it. And here's this little guy, you know, with all these papers, and one of my friends came along, and he was asking, you know, about, he wanted some new gym shoes. and he didn't have the money for it. And I said, well, look, I've got some money, but I need some help. And that's really just how it came about. I needed help. He needed some money. We came together, and he was my first employee that will begin to help cover some of the blocks I had on this paper route.
That is just amazing. Boy, I'm so proud of you.
Thank
and
you.
I hope that people listening realize that, well, bigger business, of course, is more complex, but there's some simple rules to all of it that really makes it work. So what happened after the paper route? I know you eventually ended up in college getting your
yeah.
degree in business, but what happened from the time of being 11 up until you decided to take it on as a true profession, get yourself educated,
yeah.
credentialed, and going on to the next thing?
Well, for me, it's, you know, I still wanted to fall in that business. I thought going to college, they would teach me how to be an entrepreneur. I was wrong. They taught me how to go and work for someone else, but I got a wealth of knowledge and a good foundation. I went to Clark Atlanta University. And up until that point, I knew it was some sort of business. I still didn't know exactly what it was. I started different little ventures and always worked. So I probably had hundreds of jobs where I was always just working. I'm trying to earn income, but also just finding things out and how things work. And when it wasn't until my year at Clark Atlanta University where I had a class called Entrepreneurship to Enterprise. I'm with a man named Dr. Dennis Kimbrough, who had written the book Think and Grow Rich, The Black Choice. And I had already actually read Think and Grow Rich, and now I was just really intrigued by the wrote The Black Choice. And Entrepreneurship Enterprise changed my life. He taught me how to actually put some meat around it and how to do a business plan and how to, you know, where the funds come from if you're raising capital. So I really got a good, solid understanding of how business works. And when I got out of college, I actually fell into the mortgage business. I met these young men in Orlando where I was living at the time, and it looked like they were making great money, and they were doing something that they were really loving. And I found out, started asking a lot of questions about it, and I wasn't long before I became a mortgage broker and didn't have a clue, you know, what was really entailed as far as that the financial side, because growing up I never had that conversation with my mom about this is a budget, this is your credit. This is how you manage it. This is how you build it. We didn't talk about those things. And so now I'm in a situation where I've got to help other people that I know, many of my seniors, to get their finances in order, to get something that they consider to be special for them, which was a home. And that was 100% commission. I had no salary, so it was no net there. And I knew that if I didn't close loans, I wouldn't eat. And so I like to eat, and so I made sure that I worked hard, and I learned the business. And it wasn't long before I really got it, but I was getting all the stuff that nobody else wanted to do. So I was doing a lot of the first-time home buyers that had a lot of credit challenges, that needed some down payment assistance. So I learned where the money was. I learned how to fix credit. I learned how to really put people on a strategy or a plan to get that thing they wanted if they weren't ready to get it today. And that's what really helped give me my foundation. So I started speaking a lot. And as soon as people would come into my office, they would always say, well, you see what had happened was, you know, I co-signed for my cousin, and he never paid the car note, or I went through a nasty divorce, and I heard all these stories. And so I decided, you know, how can I help people, but let me put it in a book. So I decided to write a book. I had never written a book before. I had done some other writing, but never in a book. And to do the book, I decided, you know, the entrepreneur that I was, I needed to start my own publishing company. So I need to research the publishing industry. I need to talk and interview people that were already doing it and find out how this game really works. And I did that, and I started my company, Paramount Publications. And we put out a book, What Had Happened Was, A Realistic Way to View a Deal of a Lifetime. And it was really about my experiences, about my clients, people I was coming in contact with. Because, you know, on this journey, by the time I was probably 24, I was making more money than I thought I'd ever make in my life. You know, I was in a position where the money was coming. I was doing loans. But at the same time, I was probably spending more money than anybody I had ever met. And so I didn't really get it. I thought sometimes it didn't apply to me. So I had to go through all that and rebuilding and understanding what this truly was about. And I had to be a good steward and responsible for what I had been given as well. And that's what really kind of put me on the trajectory. The book took off, and that's what ended up actually getting me on CNN.
Let's talk about what you just said about winding up. Boy, would lots of folks like to wind up making six figures. an exciting time.
Right,
a very exciting time for you. You said it was even surprising, but it was a good thing. However, there were some things that you had not learned, as well as other things that came so intuitively and so instinctively to you, and that was that money could go as fast as it came. So tell us about what happened. Did the rug get pulled from under you and you had to start all over again? What did that picture look like so people know that what happened was...
Yeah. What happened was, right, and I've got the story to go with it. It was, for me, the way it happened, you know, I'm 24 years old. I'm fresh out of college. And here I am making $180,000. And, you know, I really, at this point, you know, I thought I was rich with that $20 when I was young. I really thought I was rich now. And here I am in this role where I'm making the money. It's coming so rapidly. And you feel like when you're making a lot of money, you always think you're going to make a lot of money. You think that this is going to continue. You're just going to ride this wave on out and just build from there. You don't think about the chances of what could happen. And what happened for me was that the industry changed, and I had a little bit of a shift where my business started declining. And so, again, I'm 100% commission, and, you know, I'm used to getting $20,000, $15,000 checks and things like that. And now the market shifted, and they weren't there. And I can remember I had a $20,000 credit card that had a $20,000 limit on it. And, you know, I would swipe that thing till the back almost came off. And I had a monthly minimum payment of about $1,200. And I would just write the check with ease until the money started slowing down. And it really kind of hit home. I think that's what really smacked me upside the head and said, wake up. You know, when you can't write that minimum payment, now I can no longer make the minimum payment, I've got a problem. What happens now?
Right.
You know, I've been telling all these other people what to do. And that's where I really had to buckle down and really kind of come up with a formula and a plan of how I was going to do this, how I needed to get out of debt, how I needed to repair my credit now. And the things that I've been teaching but I had not been applying in my own life. And it took some time, you know, but I was determined to say, okay, no, I'm not going to be in this position. What do I need to do? And I really started to set some guidelines and a blueprint for my life to say, okay, I'm not going to have this take a hold of me. I know how to control it. And I think that's the power of knowing it's yourself and not letting someone else do it for you, because you go through it. And once you learn something like that, you know, you can always go back and fix a situation if you have to go back. And so there has been times, you know, especially as an entrepreneur, you're up and you're down. You got to have that foundation and the fundamentals to understand how to fix your situation, how to take control of your finances, because this is your life. You know, it's not
right.
Something that you can budget on the side and live over here. You know, it's fluid. It should go through you. And, you know, this is a part of who you are, your existence. Not many things you can do without money. And so you got to be a good steward and a good manager over it, and also know how to make it. Right.
Yeah, I'm here. You can continue.
Okay,
I think we dropped you for a few seconds.
Okay. Yeah, no, and you just got to learn. You got to be a good manager and understand, you know, how to make it, how to maintain it. I think those are the two big pieces that a lot of people miss.
Mm-hmm. So let me ask you this. It sounds like, you know, I know from what I understand, there are millions of people who are financially challenged in their homes, in their credit. When I hear you talk about rebounding yourself, there are a few things I want you to share with people. Because I think there are tried and true principles that if you follow them, you can really put those things behind you, obviously, because you're a perfect example of that. The first thing I heard you say is it's a sobering experience. It's something you really got to come face to face with, and the first thing you do is write yourself a reality check.
Right.
When you can't pay, you said when I couldn't pay that minimum payment, you knew something had really gone wrong. So the first thing people need to do is realize if you're living in a certain kind of way with that inability, you know, a lot of people, from what I understand, still feel that there's a level of comfort when you can still make those payments, just utilize your credit ability. I want you to speak to that and then the reality check. And then if you could give us just a few steps of what do you do then? The reality check comes. What do you seek out a professional advisor like yourself for the or should it be a certain income level when you do that? I want to know the practical direction to take with that.
Yeah, well, I think the first thing what I learned, like you said, is very sobering, and that truly is a reality check to know that you know here I'm responsible for my destiny from this standpoint. As it relates to, you know, doing what I need to do to earn and taking care of my responsibility. And, you know, it's funny because I was having a conversation recently, the whole idea that, you know, responsibility to me trumps purpose. We're responsible. We've been given certain responsibilities. And I think when you're responsible, a lot of times your purpose is tied in that of you being responsible. Mm-hmm. But that's our first is to be responsible. And I realized I wasn't being responsible. I was being really irresponsible with money. I was spending, you know, not wisely. I was just buying things that I didn't need and just to buy them. And I really had to go back and look at that whole mindset, which actually has driven me to create a program now that's called Fundamental Wealth Principles. And so what I consider is you're talking about the steps, and these were the things I had to look at. They were unofficial at that time, meaning I hadn't put them into a package. But I had to really learn for myself what it would take. I had to come up with a formula to understand how to do this. And the formula for me was what I consider to be wealth, is the wisdom to establish assets and leverage the harvest. And so it's the wisdom to establish assets and leverage the harvest. And the wisdom is to be wise enough to know who you are and where you are. And that's something that we don't look at a lot of times. It's really defining who we are. And that's what I had to look at. Who am I? What am I supposed to be doing? Who was I created to be? And knowing that my who is not my title. It's not a VP of or a mortgage banker or none of those. That's not who I was. That's what I did. And then once you understand who you are, you got to be real about where you are. Am I in debt? Am I on the verge of bankruptcy? Do I have bad credit? You know, am I not making enough right now? Or am I behind in my bills? And just really kind of being real about that and looking and listing out where you are, knowing what your responsibilities are, knowing what the payments are that you have to make, and really starting to write this stuff down. And I say write it down instead of typing it sometimes because I believe in what's called a head, heart, hand experience. To where it has to be internal. And so if I think about it first, then it goes to my heart and then it comes from my hand to manifest. And I think that's a connection that you create, and especially with your finances, because it's about building some sort of relationship to money and your relationship to finances and that part of your life. And that's why I call my company Financial Life Connection, because this is a part of a huge part of our lives. And this is a part, if we don't get it, it's the choice of or the decision of having a nice, comfortable life or a nice existence versus having a challenged, stressful existence. And eliminating some of the things that we have, like a poverty mindset, and realizing if you do have that, what are the things that you can do? Because all the things that we talk about as it relates to money are mental. You know, they start in the mind first. Before you write down anything, it's a mind thing. And so we have to have some sort of shift in thinking first. And so once you know where you are, then you establish, you know, where do I want to go? And that's a goal setting, and a lot of us fail in that goal setting. So I had to set some goals and said, these are my financial goals. By the end of 12 months, I want to be here. By the end of 6 months, I need to be here. And I set these goals, and then I put the objectives in place of how I was going to get to the goal. How many loans did I have to close? How many books did I need to sell? What did I need to do to get to that point? And then I had to discover what my why was. And I tell people all the time, your why has to be bigger than a paycheck. You know, what's the purpose? What drives you? What wakes you up early in the morning, keeps you up late at night? You know, and for me, it's my wife and my children. That's, I want them to have more, be better, and I know I'm the catalyst to help a lot of that happen. So that's what drives me. That's the why. So it's not about the paycheck because the paycheck is old. You know, it may not seem at the time, you know, that it won't, but it will. It'll get old. And so if something else has to motivate you and drive you and propel you to want to achieve. And then I start looking at our non-monetary assets. A lot of people think they don't have anything, but they do have something. They are wealthy because time is one of my most valuable resources. You know, I get 86,400 seconds in each day, and I have to be responsible with that time, and I want to invest that time to get some sort of return on it. It's not always in dollars, but there is a return, and you've got to decide what are you trading your time for, and is it worth it? Because your time is valuable. You know, the last time I checked, the U.S. Mint makes about $600 million a day, but I have not found a time factory. They're not making more time. You know, this is it.
Mm-hmm.
And so your time, your relationships, your gifts and talents, your mindset, what do you think about? Are you disciplining your thoughts? You know, what are you? Are you planting those thoughts on some good fertile soil? What are you feeding yourself? I had to go through this whole process to understand that I did have something of value, and if I had no money, I could take those things and turn them into money. I could take the gifts and talents that I had and create something that was a business, that was an additional stream of income. But it was about creating a plan, and sometimes we don't create the plan, and we just live by default. And the plan was so crucial, you know, and it said over and over again that if you fail the plan, you plan to fail. And I was not ready to fail, and I wanted to have a plan, and I wanted to execute that plan. And it's just what I did, and I used that now to show other people how to execute their plan, you know. And you said something earlier about the whole idea of taking baby steps, and I think that's such a big thing. You know, they say the journey of 1,000 miles starts with one step. You just got to do something and take that first step. A lot of people, you know, think that you can't start a business with no money. Well, I need a lot of money to start business. Well, no, you may need a lot of money to start a $1 million business, but that $1 million business was first a $1,000 business. So
mm-hmm.
use what you have to slowly build. Get the 1,000, turn it into 4,000, turn it into 8,000, and then you'll build up. Now you've got money to make money. And so it's about how you look at it and the perspective that you have on things to determine how you can win.
Clyde, you know what? My thought and theory on what you've just said and all that I've learned about you, if you have to start selling some candy, start there.
There you go. There you go.
Seriously.
Now, grow where you're planted. Grow where you're planted. We overlook and we take for granted, you know, small beginnings and what we already have and where we are. We all have some sort of gift and talent, and we think that everybody knows what we know. But we're experts in our own right. You know, I think it was in Malcolm Gladwell's book, Outliers, he talks about how it takes 10,000 hours to become an expert. And that's generally about 4 years or 4.5 years of working full-time or doing something 40 hours a week. So we're experts in customer service. We may be experts in, you know, call centers or be an expert student. Or it's so many things that we take for granted that we could turn around and make money doing, but we've just got to think about it and realize that, you know, it's not even about thinking outside the box. We just got to realize there is no box. We create it how
right.
we want to create, and that's what we've
right.
got to do. The sky is the beginning, not the limit.
Well, you've told us a lot of things in answer to my question, and I wrote down some of the important things about being responsible after you give yourself a reality check. Make sure you establish some kind of and follow some kind of formula.
Yeah.
It requires a shift in thinking, setting goals, and being motivated to make sure you're going to take yourself to the next level. Now, here's what right. I want to ask about, too. People listening know that, of course, you are an expert. All of this sounds very sound, foundational, fundamental information
mm-hmm.
to you. When you're pulling your
mm-hmm.
hair out, when you really just are not, you know, knowing exactly, you know, that what to do situation from month to month, one of the things that I'm sure you could say, and I want you to tell us some of those practical things, people are overspending. They're living beyond their means. Do you tell people directly, you got to stop spending money on this? I know I've seen on television on several shows, there are things that people think are necessities and they aren't. They're things that they want. Talk to us about that, because I know that can change your budget overnight.
Yeah, it definitely can. And that's one of the things that we like to do in the program is we do what's we call an expense analysis to see exactly where your expenses are, what are you spending. And I do what's called a bank statement bio with a lot of my clients. And what we do is look at the last 12 months of your bank statements. And bank statements don't lie. They
mm-hmm.
really can determine, we can show where you place your value. And so that's one of the things to see first. Let's see where the money is going. And a lot of people think they have no additional money, and I can always, 9 times out of 10, find money in the budget or find money in those statements or see where you're spending. And what happens a lot of times is when we do the expense analysis, we do an income analysis to see what's coming in, and then determine where your gap is. You know, it's crucial to know where your gap is. How much am I short? It's one of those things, you know, like you said, you're pulling your hair out. We don't want to see that we're short. We don't want to know that we're $500 short or $600 short every month, because then we don't think that there's a tie-in to how we can fill it. We just feel like we're in a job and we're not making enough. And so, you know, hopefully something will happen. And then that's that default mentality. Instead of saying, okay, I'm $600 short. And what will happen is you don't address it, that $600 will turn to $1,200 with overdraft fees and all these other things. And so I really go in and we dissect the bank statement. And you also realize that $25 under purchases are what can just destroy our financial plan, because you'll spend, you know, you'll break a $20 bill and it's gone and you don't know where it went. And so we've got to be conscious of the details and those small things and tracking it. One of the things I learned is John D. Rockefeller, who was one of the richest men in the country, wrote down everything that he spent. Anytime he would spend some money, he would write it down. And I started applying, you know, doing that in my own life. And it makes a world of difference because, again, you've got this connection to what you've actually just bought, and it's not a disconnect that some people have when they just swipe a card and they're not connected to it. But you've got to go back to those ledger days, or what I call going back to the basics and seeing exactly where it is and understanding exactly where I am spending my money and really assessing before you make certain purchases, ask yourself, is this necessary? Is this a need or is it truly a want? And how is this purchase going to make me better? And when I started asking myself those types of questions, some of the things became irrelevant. I did not need them. Or if I go back and I do what I call a 48-hour kind of cool-off before I make a purchase, I realize I don't really want it that bad. I didn't need it. It was an impulse. And we've got to learn that, and we've got to learn ourselves and why we do certain things, and that the marketers are out to get you. You know, they're in business to make you spend. You've got to be in business to protect your finances and name your dollars and tell them where they're going to go and not let them tell you where they're going to go. And when that begins to happen, I think, when we make our vices become smaller than our goals. We've got to make our goals bigger than our vices. So that pair of shoes doesn't seem as important when you know my goal after 12 months is to have this. And I think that's where the goal setting piece comes into play. Of saying that, you know, we've got to be able to do this. We've got to manage our outflows. And if you set goals, you know exactly that this is what I really want to achieve. And so I'm going to do anything in my power to make sure I keep as much money in my pocket as possible to hit it.
You said a very interesting term. You called it default thinking. And mm-hmm. When you say default thinking, I think that's a real interesting concept. Mm-hmm. I'm all about trying to spin things and flip the script, and I like the fact that that creates in our heads the idea that you need to be doing something different. What is
right.
it that you need to be doing different to come up with that $500 or $600 that you
right.
need? And yep. from what you've just said, you're suggesting then to look and outside the box, think outside the box about how to come up rather than pulling it from your overdraft protection.
Right, exactly. That's a much better investment. Overdraft protection is not an investment. You want to make sure that, you know, you're maximizing what you have. And we've got these gifts and talents that we've been given for a reason. But sometimes we just don't explore them to see exactly what we can do. So when you do that, it may be something as simple as, remember, going back to solve a problem. So whether, you know, I may be able to write well, there's other people that need writing services, and you may be able to write for them. And it doesn't mean that you've got to start this multi-million-dollar business, but you just may need three clients that can provide $1,500 a month for you. And you've just got to understand that, especially in this technology age and information age that we're in, it's easy to get the information out here and to identify who may need your services. And so we're just going to be intentional about doing that and not just going through the flow of just, hey, you know, I woke up and hopefully something good will happen. But you got to make something good happen and you got to go after it. And, you know, it's hard for me in a sense because I don't want to make it seem like it's just super easy. Like, this is all you have to do is decide and, you know, but that's where it begins. And sometimes I think we overcomplicate things. You know, we make them too difficult. My grandfather was a sharecropper. You know, the family needed more food, he planted more seeds. So what I'm saying is, let's plant more seeds. Let's figure out what are we planting. Let's plant more seeds. Let's see how we can use our relationships, you know, to leverage and get what we want, because sometimes it's not about what you know, it's who you know. So if you're not networking to build those relationships, you may be missing something there. So you've got to look at the whole picture and figure out how you can leverage those assets that you have to get that business going or to create that additional stream of income. you just got to make a decision to start it and do it. And just look at examples. There's so many examples nowadays of people that had nothing and started something to build on. And I think that's where it begins. So whether you're basket weaving, you're taking pictures, or you're cooking, some people are great cooks, but they're not selling their food. So it just begins to do something and get with people that may be able to help you. Don't rely on your own understanding. You know, get with wise counsel. I have an advisor I talk to several times a month because I don't know everything. And I need that. I need somebody to help guide me and to help, you know, determine my path. And when you become the smartest person in your circle, that's when it's time to get a new circle because you're not growing and you got to keep growing.
Mm-hmm. Well, let me ask a couple more questions. This is just fascinating. I think for most families that would be in a financial situation or challenge or crisis, looking at the expenses, making sure that the things that are unnecessary are eliminated, looking at guarding against default thinking, finding other ways to make money, whether it's something entrepreneurish or finding part-time employment, but something so that you're not constantly dealing with that deficit each month. I think that that would probably solve and satisfy most families who are in a financial situation. Now, there's a whole aspect of saving and investing, which is a good idea regardless of what level you are in life. Speak to the people who only have small amounts that they can begin with. Where should, how much and where should they put that money? And then let's talk about next level people who see, well, you know, I'm here, but my dream is big. I want to get there. What might I be thinking about trying to do because I've got $5,000 or $10,000 that I can invest?
Yeah. Well, a couple of things. One is that, you know, save something, start somewhere, you know, and pay yourself first. That's the thing. I think that's one of the hardest things for most people to do because they want to give the power company the money first instead of writing a check to themselves. No matter if that check is $20, write it to yourself and pay yourself because it becomes a habit. And that's what you want to create is taking care of you instead of taking care of everybody else first. I think we have to do that. Like I say, it doesn't matter if it's 5, 10, but if it becomes a habit and you want to start doing that. I've got so many stories of friends or people that I've coached and come in contact with that started writing checks for themselves. And 3 years later, you know, what they would do is every year or every month they would try to up the ante, and it became a game to where I want to try to save more. And at the end of 3 years or so, they had saved enough money to begin their own business to start something that they really wanted to start. But it's about doing it. Or a story of, you know, someone that wasn't contributing their 401k, and then they decided to because they heard something or they realized that this may make a difference. And 15 years later, they're able to use some of that money to do something that they need to do. And it saved them from so much. So it's being able to see past the now. A lot of times we're so stuck up in the now, you can't see past it. You've got to be able to see past the now and know that, you know, the power of compounding interest, that it can work for you or against you. And for most of us, it's working against us because we're paying interest instead of earning interest. So you want to be able to earn some interest. You want to be able to put your money in a place that will grow for you. But one of the things I think that we really need to look at is investing in ourselves. We've got to be able to invest in ourselves because why can we expect someone else to invest in ourselves if we haven't invested in ourselves? So we've got to identify, you know, those things I talked about who we are, where we are, where we want to go to get, you know, to do what we need to do. And if that's sacrificing to get things for 12 months for myself so I can start this business that I think is going to, you know, be tremendous or buy this tool that I need that I know I can open up several more jobs for me depending on what I do. And I think we've got to start going back and looking at some of those things and just really seeing that over time it will build. And we've got to learn how to delay gratification. It's not going to happen overnight. And we didn't get ourselves in some of these situations overnight, so we can't fix them overnight. So it takes time, and you've got to be willing to put in the time and be committed to seeing a difference and knowing that tomorrow can be different only if you do something different today. Doing the same thing, expecting different results, we know that's insanity. So we want to make sure that we're not doing the same stuff. Try it. You know, save something. Start today. Put $5 away. you know, and not be ashamed that that's all I have or feel like I'm not going to do anything because that's all I have. And realizing that's where it begins. And make sure you're doing the basic things, like if you have a job, that you have 401k, they're doing matching, invest in that 401k. You know, get an IRA. If you have children, you know, think about some of these things that you can do to, as vehicles for college. I love the idea of even, you know, well, not even the idea. I love all of our people making sure that we got life insurance. You know, it's a sad thing when we don't, and the inevitable happens and we're not prepared. Some of these small things keep putting us further behind, and we keep getting setbacks. Instead of doing some of the basic fundamentals to do those, get some life insurance, get a policy, and realize that, you know, it may cost you $20 a month, but we need to allocate and figure out how we can find the funds to do exactly what we need to do. And we've got the potential. We've just got to tie into it.
Absolutely. So you start with $5. Let's say that $5 turns into $5,000, $10,000. What do you tell an individual who comes to you who really doesn't know what to do make that money grow?
It really depends on someone's risk tolerance and where they are in life and the age and all these other factors. But one of the things I think that's it's really simple, like I mentioned, the 401k, but also your IRAs. Think about getting a Roth IRA and thinking about starting that and maxing it. And it's somewhere to start that will start building something for you. You know, and if you look and you're interested in stocks, definitely talk to a broker. The stock market is definitely a good investment, but you've got to understand it. And a lot of people are intimidated by it. But you've got to understand it and know what you want to pull out of it. What are you looking to really get out of this? And an easy way to start is to invest in what you're already using. You know, buy stuff you use. If you use Tide, invest in it. If you're wearing Nike gym shoes, invest in it. Doesn't mean you have to buy thousands and thousands of dollars worth of stock, but start somewhere. Maybe you got $1,000 that you're really not, you know, scared to lose. Start there, but don't play with money that's necessity money. You know, don't go. It's not a gamble. This is not Vegas, and so you don't want to take your bill money or money that you really need to make those investments. But if you've got $5,000 that you can play with, and that's the term I would use is to play with it. Then you may want to kind of dabble in because a lot of people study this for a living. This is what they do. And the people that win at the stock market go in with a goal, with an end in mind. They know when they want to pull out. They know what type of returns they want to see. I need to see 10% returns, and I'm pulling out no matter where it's going to go next. I think we've got to be able to start doing things like that, and that comes into planning. And it's the same thing with business. You've got to have an exit strategy. How do I want to get out of this business? I don't want to just ride the wave up and ride it all the way down. I want to potentially sell at some point where it reached a critical mass. And so I think all these things we have to look at, but it all really comes back down to planning and having the end in mind and knowing what's my goal. Once you know the end, then it's a lot easier to fill in the blank.
Very, very wise advice. Well, this question is, I'll let you decide. Everybody wants to be rich. Everybody wants to have, you know, the high life. Everybody wants to be a millionaire.
Mm-hmm.
When you hear that, and I'm just asking your own, your gut feelings, your thoughts that you can share with people, you know that that's not something that you just wish for. I think people think when we see people who have reached such an elite status financially, because of how we see they live, we think it was easy. And so just speak for a moment to people about perhaps they do have an idea. If it's wishing and wanting, that's not a strategy. But perhaps they do have an idea, and maybe it is a multi-million dollar idea.
Mm-hmm.
Speak to strategizing yourself on your belief and your faith and the efforts that it takes to get there. From what I understand, people who become millionaires and things like that, they are planning that. They're strategizing that. There's, you know, certain steps that will definitely catapult you there sooner than others. So I want to hear your expert insight on that whole idea.
Sure. I think it's very rare that you'll ever meet an accidental millionaire. That's somebody that just kind of stumbled into millions. That's very rare. So you're going to meet the people that have, you know, they put in the blood, sweat, and the tears to do it, and it's generally a long road for them. And they've made a lot of sacrifices along the way, as we talked about trading your time. What are you trading your time for? And sometimes it's challenging, you know, especially when you have children. As I do, you know, you make decisions that I could do with my children, but instead I'm doing this. And being real about it, that you are making that exchange, but what am I exchanging it for? Well, I'm exchanging it for a better life for them. At the same time, I want to look, make sure I've got some balance. You know, an idea without a plan to implement it and the ambition to do it is just an idea. So the planning piece, I cannot emphasize, you know, how important it is to make sure that you're planning it out. And you've got a model for success and what it looks like for you. And you've defined what financial success is to you. You know, I've talked to a lot of young adults, and they'll say, well, I want to be rich. And I'm saying, what does that mean? You know, tell me more. And, well, I want to have a lot of money. What is a lot of money? You know, and when you start really, let's pick this apart. How much are you going to need for this? What are you going to need for that? This can't be arbitrary. Success shouldn't be just arbitrary, and I want it, and this is what I want. You've got to define what that looks like, why you need it, why you want it in your life as well, and we begin to attract those things that we talk about, the things, the actions that we put forth. It's like the law of attraction. It's true, and it really works, but we've got to start, you know, by doing it. And the millionaires that I've come in contact with and I've worked with or I'm friends with, it's generally a common thread. They have a relentless work ethic. They work harder than most people I know. And it doesn't just stop when they reach $1 million. They're building and they're trying to secure that million and build more. So it's a work ethic that's unparalleled. It's a desire to want it. You know, some people want it, but some people really, really want it. And I think it's Les Brown that says, how hungry are you? You know, how hungry? How bad do you really want to have this manifest in your life? So when you want it bad, you're willing to do a lot of things that other people won't do to get it. You're willing to have those sleepless nights and work. You're willing to not watch television anymore because it's not adding value to you. You're willing to cut out those things that just don't bring value to your life. And sometimes it's hard because you're isolating yourself to a degree. And people say it's lonely at the top. It's not just a cliche, but what they're really saying is that because everybody doesn't think like that. It's a percentage of people in the country that have that type of thought process where they're willing to give up the life they have now of comfort, or what they perceive to be comfort, to get something extraordinary that most people haven't achieved. And I think that's that thing that you're seeing, that's that common thread. And they believe that they can do it. They believe it, you know, without a shadow of a doubt that it's going to happen. You know, if you don't believe something is going to happen, it probably won't happen. And so you've got to believe it without a shadow of a doubt. One of my favorite quotes is Muhammad Ali. And he said he started calling himself the greatest of all time, hoping that people would one day believe it. And, you know, he goes down in history now as the greatest of all time. And it wasn't because someone else told him he was. It was because he told you, this is who I am. And I think the successful people I know, the millionaires that I know, they have defined who they are. And they know that they're the best. And they're going to do everything they can to make sure that they continue to be the best in that craft, in that industry, or in that line of work. And they'll do what it takes. And I think those are the things that separate the winners or the people that want this true success from the people that just want to talk about having success. And they like the idea of entertaining it, but aren't willing to make the sacrifices and do what it takes.
I'd like for you to, that was wonderful. And I'm glad that you were very elaborate about it. I think that it clarifies for so many people that it is not, there is no such thing as that overnight success, and it does require a very different mindset to get you there. And that I think you might want to say too that you know, every day is not a holiday for them either.
Oh,
so it takes a lot of work and a lot of highs and lows in their days too. But you got to know who you are, believe who you are, and that is definitely what will take you there.
Yes.
Well, we've got a few minutes left. I want to talk about you. I want to talk about the things that you're doing. I know you started a tour I want you to tell people about that. I want you to tell about some of the services that you offer individuals and companies. Tell people how to get hold of you.
Sure, sure. Well, we just launched the program that I mentioned that we created, Fundamental Wealth Principles. And called it Fundamental Wealth Principles with the emphasis on the mental because, again, it's a mindset thing. First, we think things before we do them. So before I moved my hand, I thought about it. Before I spoke a word, I thought about it. And so it's mental. It's not about just filling in numbers in a balance, on a budget sheet. It's about having a true connection to those numbers. And that's what we talk about. So we go through that whole wealth model of wisdom to establish assets and leverage the harvest. We work through an expense income analysis and identifying gaps. But then we talk about how to fill the gaps. I think we often talk about the problem, we know the solution, but now I want to show people how to implement the solutions in their lives. And so what we started is this 25-city tour that we're going around the country. Last year we did 10 cities just to sort of go out and begin the groundwork. And now we're going around and we're going into a lot of churches and different organizations and to provide this information to people, what I'm calling is a right-now solution, but it's Fundamental Wealth Principles for Life. And again, it's about covering every aspect of it from the standpoint of your finances and to create, opportunities to increase your streams of income and to show people how real it is, whether it's a home-based business or you starting a full-blown, storefront. It's whatever that looks like for you. We provide and have the tools to help you do that, but also keeping you close to like-minded people. I think that's one of the things that happens. We offer webinars going forward after we do this. Workshop, we have webinars and teleconferences, and it's about being close to other hot coals, and that's what I want to make sure people are, because, if a hot coal next to another coal starts a fire, but a hot coal by itself eventually burns out, and so you want to stay close to like-minded people that are doing what you want to do, and they can show you, and you can learn from them, and so we want to make sure we foster that type of environment. So it's what I'm calling turning financial literacy upside down, because I met so many people that it wasn't about you start talking investing and they check out because they're trying to figure out how to make it from now to next week. And I want to help those people. I want to make sure that they see, this is not the time to lose hope. This is the time to realize that you have help. And we want to provide that and be that help to them. So definitely if they want more information about that, they can reach out at info@thewealthmovement.com. And it's info@thewealthmovement.com if you want more information about Fundamental Wealth Principles and see what cities we're going to. You can also check it out on my website at ClydeAndersonOnline.com. Check me out there. They can check me out every Wednesday on Main Street Radio. It's Love 860 if you're in the Atlanta metro area. But if not, just download the iHeartRadio app and just search Love 860, and you can tune into myself and my co-host, Patrice Washington, every week as we talk Main Street Radio and what we call keeping it simple. It's money talk for the rest of us. And we just bring it to you, whether it's about business, personal finance, we talk about it. And, I provide small business coaching. I provide individual coaching and consulting to really try to, get you from where you are to where you want to be. And that's my goal. So I do that for small business owners as well as for individuals. And then we also have, Paramind Publications. So if you're an author or aspiring author, we have ghostwriting services as well as publishing services with national distribution. And we'd love to talk to you. So feel free to, reach out, visit the site, find me on Twitter. I'm always out here in the social media space at Clyde Anderson on Twitter or on my Facebook page at The Wealth Movement.
Lastly, would you tell people the theme and theory behind what had happened was? I know they'd love to pick up your book.
Yes, yes. What happened was, my first book that's actually in the second revision, what happened was A Realistic Way to View a Deal of a Lifetime. It was about four characters that live in a town called Reality, somewhere between perfect bliss and rock bottom, similar to the place where you and I live. And the characters that live in reality are Too Good to Be True, Just to Get By, D. Joneses, and Couldn't Care Less. And they're all trying to get this special deal, which is freedom. The ability to live out your dreams, answer your questions, and what you've been waiting for. So it shows what different characters would or wouldn't do to get something they consider to be special to them. And we talk about your character report and what that means and what that looks like. And so we give a lot of tips in there to really help guide you and just really help people see themselves. And I think at each, I've been each one of the characters at some point in my life. And I think a lot of us have, and that's where it really came from. And so that's what, we want to people to have when they pick that book up, that they have some sort of connection to it and they can see themselves. And we're actually just releasing the audio book of what happened was too next week. And so we're excited about that, and that's the story. And that's, and we've all got a story. We've all got a what happened was, embrace yours, and realize that that's the catalyst, or that's that experience that hopefully helps you change your mind and change your life.
Absolutely. Well, this has been one of the most inspiring talks I've had, and I just appreciate your truly, truly, you have a wealth of information and insight and expertise, and I know anybody who has heard this and who listened, who will listen, is going to learn a lot from it. Clyde, thank you so much. I will look forward to reaching out to you again to have you back to talk to us with an update on what you're doing and maybe some more specific topics that people may need to know about. What you're doing is absolutely incredible, amazing, and necessary, and I wish you so much more success than you're even having now. Thank you again.
Thank you. The pleasure is mine, and hopefully we'll be bringing the Fundamental Wealth Principles to your area soon, so I look forward to seeing you.
I look forward to that. I know you thought you'd be here last year, but I'll definitely make sure we stay in touch so I can help promote it and be there as well. Thank you so much, sir.
Okay.
You have yourself an amazing day. Look forward to talking to you again soon.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Take care. Thank you.
Bye. Well, I want to thank you all again, as I do every week, for joining in on Foxology. What an amazing talk, huh? I hope you learned a lot. That was truly a very enlightening conversation. That was Clyde Anderson. You can reach out to him at clydeandersononline.com. In the meantime, I'd like for you to tell your friends on your social platforms about Foxology. The show is typically on Mondays at 11:30 Central Standard Time, 12:30 Eastern Standard Time, always bringing you something that's going to be helpful and empowering, educational, and something that's definitely going to help you be wiser than when you started listening. So I want to wish you the most incredible day. I hope it's a great one. Remember this about money. Today's show was Money Talks, but it does not have a mind of its own. So it means that we have to be very conscious about what we do. We have to avoid default thinking. We have to think about our money because it can't think for itself. When it does, when we do that, the most incredible things can happen. I look forward to having you back here next Monday. Have yourself a great day. Thank you so much for listening.